Pseudopod episode 150, July 20th, 2009. This week's story, Break the Vessel by Vilar Kaftan. Hi, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair, and for this week's story we have Break the Vessel by Vilar Kaftan. It's been previously published on Script Days, and Vilar's work has also appeared in Horror, the Best of the Year, Abyss and Apex, Clark's World, and Strange Horizons, amongst others. A product of the Clarion West Writerthon, an annual fundraiser for the workshop, which, coincidentally, a friend of mine is at as I speak, it's a very different take on a very old question, narrated by no less a figure than Ben Phillips himself. Oh, and it is, of course, true.
Break the Vessel by Vilar Kaftan. Even a god has human needs if he resides in a living body. He must breathe the purest air possible. He must consume fresh food and sleep on good bedding. And he must excrete. Some priests say that this is not truly the god's need, since it results from the mortal body he occupies. I say this need is as important to a god as any man, because even gods create things they wish to be rid of. In this incarnation, Aki prefers a mid-morning session. We meet in our chamber, a narrow aisle with gold-leaf handholds on each side. I attend him with my box of soft cloths, gentilla oil, and incense. He dismisses his other attendants with a wave. They drift behind tall stone pillars 50 paces away, giving him privacy. Aki's oiled skin shines in the torchlight. I unwrap his white loincloth, set it aside, and kneel behind him. He grips the handholds and squats. I hold the lacquered ceramic pot underneath his anus. Today, he is quick. A small piece, medium brown in color, slightly soft, and very little urine. Strong in scent, but solid. Healthy. I moisten an ivory-colored cloth with oil. I wipe him gently, removing every bit of fecal matter. He stands still for my attentions. Afterwards, I sniff the air. Today, I think spiceberry is best to mask this odor. I select the incense and light it. Smoke drifts through the silent chamber, curling upwards toward the vaulted ceiling. To my surprise, he speaks to me as he stands. He has spoken before, but not often. I dislike that scent. Never use it again. I am willing, Sun Lord, I respond. The scent will be destroyed tonight. I fold the used cloth and place it in the box. It will be laundered and given to the poor. They will sew the rags into clothing, hoping for a blessing or a miracle. I have attended Aki through 2 incarnations. I was given to the Sun Temple as a boy of 6, barely older than Aki himself at that point. I studied the sacred texts and advanced quickly. My skill brought me rank, but luck brought me opportunity. When Aki's previous incarnation was 20, his attendant fell sick and went to the Dark Mother's embrace. The High Priest chose me to attend the god, and so I have. It's a lonely life, but it suits me. The honor is tremendous. I am highly ranked. After all, I touch Aki's body daily, but almost no one speaks to me. I am consecrated, yet outcast. Filthy, but necessary. The temple gives me nearly any freedom I like within the stone walls. They wish to keep me content, of course. If, mother forbid, I were discontent, my opportunity for retribution would be high. I'm thinking about Aki's incarnations as I wait for the current one to relieve himself. Last time, Aki had curly blonde hair and a fleshy bottom. Mostly cheerful, fond of sweetmeats and bread. In this life, Aki is tall and thin, gently muscled, and given to moodiness. The blonde hair that marked him as a baby has darkened to honey brown and falls straight to his narrow shoulders. His buttocks are taut and nearly hairless, and his thighs are strong from his daily walk circling the temple's inner walls. He prefers books to candies, and asks many questions of his tutors. He's 19 now, a young man, nearly at this incarnation's end. Today he struggles. His urine came easily, but his bowels are slow. I hold the pot steady as he strains himself. If only he would ask me, I would tell him to eat less cheese and more vegetables. It pains me to see him suffer. I report to the assistant chef when I see trouble with the god's diet. After we speak, he must purify himself with smoke and water. Then he adjusts the food as I recommend. But my efforts are useless if Aki demands the problematic foods. If a god insists on eating cheese, no one will deny him. We are silent together until he speaks. Do you know theology? Sun Lord, I am a fully trained priest of the seventh rank. I am also the honored wearer of 2 gold lanyards. My birth pattern is the herder, pursued by the warrior, if you wish to determine my nature. Then you will answer a question for me. I am willing, Sun Lord. The god is silent for a moment. Then he says, They tell me I made a pact with humanity at the beginning of time when the other creator gods left for the other sky. To be born into a human body again and again as a promise that the sun would rise each morning. The priests say this, and the books. I wait. In the distance, I hear the mid-morning chants. Thousands of voices surrounding the temple, praying for Aki's blessing. The walls muffled the sound, making the worshippers seem farther than they are. Finally, he says, Is this true? It is true, Sun Lord. He finishes his efforts. As I wipe him, I notice he looks raw. I use extra oil to soften his skin. Of all the boy children in the kingdoms of sand, how did you find me? How did you know which human body I had chosen? The color of your hair and the date of your birth. On the day you ascended, your new body was born. Your soul spent a year as sunlight before returning to us. The high priest read entrails to determine where your soul had flown, and in that direction he sought you. That's what they said, too. But how could you know it was me? Surely there were 1,000 babies born nearby on that same day. Many must have been blonde. How did you know? You are a god, I say, wrapping his loincloth onto his body. You cannot be mistaken for a mere mortal. He nods and seems satisfied. I look at his stool in the pot. Too firm today, but the color is good. Medium brown against the gold and turquoise glaze. An appropriate amount with a mild scent and consistent texture. I sweeten the air with incense of cerula seeds. I spend most of my time reading in the temple library. At seventh rank, I have access to anything I want, aside from Aki's sacred collection. The god calls for me once, sometimes twice a day. My only duty, aside from attending him, is to study his stool for any dietary problem. Diarrhea, constipation, food sensitivity, or tapeworms, mother forbid. If that happened, the entire squad of kitchen workers would be executed. I don't have other temple duties because of my peculiar status. I pursue my dream, to know the divine. I read the accounts of priests who have served Aki's spirit, who write of his undying light and internal brilliance. The other gods left the world after creating it, promising to return, but Aki has lived with humanity since time began. He deceives the Dark Mother with his mortal body. Therefore, he alone among the gods is truly immortal and will never drink from the breasts of death. The sun will always rise again. It always has and always will. The sacred texts offer no histories from priests like myself who serve Aki's body. At first, this bothered me. Is he not immortal? A blend of divine and human natures? Why ignore his humanity? Upon meditation, I understood. This distinction is due to the transience of flesh, contrasted to the unchanging divine. Aki embraces both. It is proper that texts of his divinity be preserved in a library, and the details of his humanity vanish before they are written. The insight inspires me to new efforts. I write records in my mind, impermanent like my own flesh. Records tracking his feces' scent, shape, color, the time he took to produce them. I memorize the curve of his muscled buttocks as he squats, the pucker of his anus, the way each piece coils from his body like a snake. This is my secret, my communion with the sacred. I am no god, but I touch one each day, and this is more than most men dream of. Today, Aki's stool is soft and reddish-brown. It's not blood, thank the gods, but certainly far too moist. It smells of overbrewed tea. I determine that Aki is anxious, and his stomach upsets his bowels too much. The tea is an irritant, and he should not drink any for the next 3 days. I hold the pot close in case he is not yet finished. Loose stools can be subtle and surprising. He says, "What is your name?" "Numa, Sun Lord." "Numa. I have been reincarnated since the beginning of time, is this true?" "He has spoken to me more in the past week than he has since early childhood. It flatters me." "It is true, Sun Lord. Why do I not remember my previous incarnations?" "This is an easy question for even a beginning-ranked priest," I say. "Because your flawed human body represses your divine memory. Your body protects itself through a shield of ignorance. If you recalled your past and future, you would burst into unquenchable flames. You would overwhelm your flesh. It would be a glorious light. It would be the last light, Sun Lord. All humanity would perish in your radiance." "Tell me of outside," he says abruptly. "Outside the kingdoms of sand?" "Outside this temple. I have never been there except when I was a baby. I want to know details. I want to see it the way I can see the gods in my picture books." I set down the pot, satisfied that he is finished. "I am willing, Sun Lord," I say. "But you should ask your priest companions. I am merely a..." He snorts. "They will not tell me." "This is dangerous ground, and I have no authority to speak on the matter." I start wiping him, trying to think of a good response. He says, "Answer my question." "I am willing, Sun Lord, although..." "Now." "Outside is the darkness which seeks you. Outside are the people who rely on you to rise each morning to renew your promise. They press against the walls of this temple, praying for your health and spirit. You are our sole connection to our divine parentage. The mother waits outside, looking to take you from us." "I should go there to destroy her. Then no one will die ever again." "Sun Lord," I say, alarmed. I set down my cloth. I cannot contradict him, but if the high priest should hear that I said nothing... "You are compassionate to stay with us, Sun Lord, to grant us your presence. All known history for us, but an eye blink to you. It would be cruel for you to abandon us. We could not allow that." "I am a god. I can do as I please." "Begging all pardon, Sun Lord, but your absence from the temple would destroy us." He didn't respond. I can't see his face, so I don't know what he might be thinking. I pick up the cloth and finish ministering to him. Finally, he asks, "Have you been outside?" "Yes, many years ago, before I came to the temple." "Tell me what you remember." I think back. "I remember little, Sun Lord." "Tell me something," he says wistfully. His sweaty buttocks shine in the torchlight. His profile from the back is young and vulnerable. He rouses something in me. Sympathy, perhaps, or the same wandering dream. "I found a bird once," I say. It's the first memory that comes to me. "A baby bird that had fallen from its nest. Its wing was broken. I cared for the bird and fed it while the wing healed." "Did the bird fly away?" "I don't know. My father gave me to the temple before I could find out. Perhaps it flew, or perhaps it died. Many birds fly over the temple, but I cannot recognize mine." He says nothing as I light incense and scent the air. I've chosen gray slatimist blossoms, which smell like a winter oasis. I wrap his loincloth. He turns and gazes at me with pale blue eyes that I've never seen up close before. He's a young man with a boy's face. He tilts his head, considering me with a steady look. I feel stripped naked, vulnerable to his presence. Forgive me, Sun Lord, I whisper. He makes no response. Then he claps for his attendants to return. They swarm back like a plague of flies. I leave with the pot and his stool, which I commit to my mind's unwritten records. The closest a man can come to immortality is to touch a god, to know his hands have brushed against power greater than his own. It reminds him both of limitations and of potential. A man must struggle in life. He must cast away that which is no longer useful. He must seek improvement to better himself and the surrounding world until the mother embraces him. I keep Aki's body clean so the god need not soil his hands with human waste. Sometimes, in moments of hubris, I imagine a spiritual role for myself. If his spirit must touch mortal flesh and absorb its temptation, then perhaps I could cleanse his soul. I could remove the marks of human sin and wipe his essence clean. It is a fantasy, but a delightful dream. He squats before me, his hands gripping the golden handles of our isle. I am thinking about the conflict between his body and spirit when he asks me, "What happened to the soul that was in this body before me?" I pause before answering. "Sun Lord, I am willing, but I am frightened. I fear what the High Priest would say to me if he knew we spoke of these things." "There is no law which forbids this." "I am afraid." "No one can hear us. My attendants stand beyond those pillars." "Sun Lord, I trust you, but I am human. I am still afraid." "I will never tell the High Priest of our conversations. I swear this by the eternal light and by my own name." I shiver. He has just created law here before me. Divine law, which cannot be altered. Aki has elevated me to counselor in so few words. I feel dizzy. "Sun Lord," I say. I am honored beyond my ability to hold such feeling. "Now tell me. What happened to the soul that was here before I entered this body?" His bowels are slow today. There will be ample room to talk. "There was no soul before yours, Sun Lord." "Why not? I was born to a human mother." "Your soul entered the vessel upon your rebirth." "But what about the time while this body grew inside a woman? And while it was being weaned, before I entered it, where was its soul? The teachings say that all humans and gods have souls." "It is true, Sun Lord." "So this body, before I entered it, there was a soul here?" "This body was created as a vessel for you, Sun Lord." "So there was no soul here?" "There is yours, Sun Lord. Before me." I watch waste pass through his anus. It folds neatly into loose ridges and curls into the ceramic pot. I consider my words carefully. "You created this body to host your holy essence, Sun Lord. It was a vessel waiting to hold your soul. It was nothing until it was you." "But this body's mother, she couldn't know it was me, or would be me, right?" "She did not, Sun Lord. She thought it was her baby, her son." "It is true. What did she call me?" He's finished eliminating. I wipe him gently. "I do not understand, Sun Lord. What did she call this body which she thought was her baby?" I think back to the day we brought Aki to his temple. I had not journeyed out, of course. That was a job for the High Priest. But people in the temple talk, and sometimes I overhear things. I say, "Clow, I believe." "Clow," he says. I moisten him with oil and fill the air with cream blossom incense. It smells delicate, like springtime, and its aroma blends with his to neutralize both. When he stands, he turns to look at me. He smiles boyishly. "Thank you, Numa," he says, his face like sunlight. His kindness strikes me speechless. I set down the pot and bow to the floor. My head aches where I press it against the stone. "Sun Lord," I murmur. When he departs, I inhale the aroma deep in the pot, where even incense cannot cancel the smell. I want to remember this day, and sense are closest to memory. On the day before his 23rd birthday, Aki's body must die. Were Aki to achieve the prime of manhood, his light would shine so brightly that his body could no longer contain it. He would ignite. All men would be blind, and their skin would crackle and burn like roast meat on a spit. Women's wombs would shrivel in their bodies, and the dark mother would gather all to her bosom to suck on her 1,000 poisonous teats. Coldness would rule the kingdoms of sand. But Aki knows this. As the sun always rises, so it must always set, in order to rise again. Aki's spirit is reborn in fire. I have only seen one such ceremony, of course. In his last incarnation, Aki was frightened. His beautiful blonde curls were shaved off, and his soft body stripped naked. He shook as he approached the woodpile, and cried as the high priest tied him to the stake. He soiled himself just before he burned. I longed to run to him and cleanse him, to remove humanity's stain before he ascended, but the flames did my work for me, and his body returned to ash. The sun rose that morning, like it always has and always will. Aki's spirit sought his new vessel, and found this one waiting. He asks me questions daily now, about faith and divinity and everything else. Not a child's worries, as once he might have, but a young man's deeper inquiries. I have devoted my life to studying Aki, and it delights me to share what I know. We are intimate, Aki and I, discussing the indestructible godhood as I minister to his vulnerable flesh. Perhaps a mother feels like this, I think, as she wipes her newborn babe's bottom. Perhaps this body's mother once wiped its bottom, calling it Clow, and loved it, not knowing what it would become. Aki shifts from side to side as he squats. He scratches his thigh. When I am reborn into a new body, I will remember none of this. Is this true? It is true, Sun Lord. The way I cannot remember what happened before or what happens while I am sunlight? Yes, Sun Lord. How do I know I will be reborn? It has always been so. But how do I know? Other gods do not visit me. I cannot remember meeting them. I have met only priests and read the teachings. How do I know? If a god asks a man about faith, how then can a man respond? I clear my throat, wondering if my words would be called heresy. I say, it is your human nature asserting itself, Sun Lord. Men doubt and men question. This is what it means to be a man. In becoming human, you abandon the certain knowledge of your nature. It does not change the truth of you. The rebirth. Will it hurt? Sun Lord, you have nearly 4 years remaining in this incarnation. It is not time yet. I want to know if it will hurt. Sweat runs down my forehead. This is truly not something I wish to discuss with him. He presses at me. Answer me, I command you. I am willing, Sun Lord, but may I ask only a small question first?
You may.
Why do you ask me? Why not read your sacred texts or consult the High Priest? I am only an attendant to your body's needs.
You were honest with me, he says, and that earns my blessing.
It is true what Aki has said. I am honest with the Divine. I open myself to it. Allow it to touch me and reshape me as part of our daily intimacy. His words bring me joy. Thank you, Sun Lord. I treasure your blessing.
Will the rebirth hurt?
I cannot say, Sun Lord. The human body might feel some pain only briefly. You yourself will feel only renewal and growth.
He considers, and we are silent as his body produces its waste. Finally, he says, what if I am not a god?
What? I ask, shocked beyond propriety.
What if there has been a mistake?
No mistake can be made. How do you know I am Aki? It is faith, Sun Lord.
But what if... See this now. Imagine the god, returning to this world. He travels as sunlight to a woman's breast where her child nurses. The woman coos at her child and calls him Clow. Aki becomes confused. Is this not his vessel, the empty one he created? But this is Clow, an infant, a child of this human mother. What does Aki do? Sun Lord? Would I be elsewhere now, in another body displacing a soul? Would this useless body have grown empty with no soul in it? A god would not create something useless. Everything has its place, as you have yours and I have mine. Where would I be? What would I be doing? Would I find another body and displace its soul? Or would I no longer be Aki, merely Clow? Which would I be had this happened? I wipe him too quickly. Sun Lord, this is an impossibility. Would this body go on, were I not in it? If my radiance were elsewhere, in another body, would this body grow old like an ordinary human being? Now I'm certain I've stumbled into heresy, so I don't respond. Answer me, he demands. I would guess so, Sun Lord, I say, my hand clenched around the stained cloth. The body is healthy and human. He nods and says no more. I inspect him to be sure he is clean, but my mind is fluttering like a bird with a broken wing. After a moment, he says, I require something from you. I am willing, Sun Lord. I pray that he doesn't look at me, not now. I wish for you to call me Clow. Yes, son, Clow. The name bursts from me, unwillingly. When we are alone like this. As you wish, Clow. Aki, I'm not thinking clearly. I can't choose an appropriate incense, so I use the first one I touch. My hand shakes as I wrap his loincloth. When he leaves, I spend the morning in prayer, frightened that I have uncovered the forbidden. Half a day later, I am still sweating. Our intimacy is edged with fire. I worship Aki. I fear Aki. This is one thing I share with Aki, then. All men excrete. All bodies consume food and take what they need to sustain life. The waste matter must leave the body. Most men are linked to their own filth. High lords use a clean cloth. Peasants use their left hands. I myself use a cloth, not so fine as the one for Aki, but a rougher weave. Women excrete too, I suppose, but it is not a matter I have spent much time thinking on. Sometimes I wonder whether Aki's blessing might transfer through me. If perhaps he offered me some morsel of food which I consumed, then later I dared wipe myself with a velvet soft ivory cloth, would such a rag confer a blessing on an ignorant peasant? Would that cloth have the same effect as something that touched Aki directly? It cannot be, but surely even the food touched by a god would transfer through me, unless perhaps the blessing was something I consumed, and no part of it became waste. Or perhaps, by passing through my weak and unworthy flesh, the blessing would transmute to sin, and the cloth with which I wiped would be ordinary. If so, then this implies that man's sin is more powerful than Aki's blessing, which contradicts all that we are taught. It is a difficult theological question, and hypothetical because it will not happen. Aki asks me questions, but he does not feed me. The temple heats from late spring into early summer. The air becomes stifling, particularly in our aisle. I sweat underneath my robes. I have thought of better answers to his questions, but he has not addressed me. I can't decide if I want him to speak, or if I'm afraid. Still, he says nothing. My fears subside into nerves, like a string vibrating long after the instrument has stopped playing. One day, he speaks again, just after filling the pot. His voice is sudden and imperious. You will help me. I am willing, son Clow, I say cautiously. I wish to go outside. The ivory cloth falls from my hand. I stare at his back, struck without an answer. His backbone juts from his flesh, above his masculine buttocks. No answer comes to me. He continues, I have found a way to sneak out. You will cover for me. I need time to escape. Pretend I am still here, having difficulty. Do not let them know I have gone. Aki! His name escapes my impious lips. He turns to face me, still naked. He is glorious indeed with his wiry muscles and his clear blue gaze, a body fit for the god within. His voice commands like a king of warriors. Do this for me. How can I disobey a god's direct order? Clutching the pot, I bow. My face presses against the ceramic rim. The stench of his feces fills my nose, searing this day into my memory. Sun Lord, begging all pardons, but if you leave us, we will die. The Dark Mother will take you, and the sun will not rise again. I will fight her, he says. I will burn her with sunlight. Sun Lord, I beg of you, do not leave this temple. I will do so. The writings say, I am not interested in the writings. I wish to live. This body has many years left. Sun Lord, I plead, it is your humanity which tempts you, which whispers to you. Do not listen to it. If my words spill out and selfishness overcomes me. If you leave, they will kill me, Sun Lord. They will drag me over hot coals and brand me with irons before they let me die. He says nothing. The silent chamber air is stifling and scented with his odor. I continue. I beg of you, if you will not think of humanity, then think of me who has showed you some small kindness, some... I hear a choked noise that makes me look up. He towers over my prostrate form, crying. Aki, I whisper. Unbidden, I set down the pot and crawl to him. My hands caress his ankles. I kiss his toes, resting my lips against his holy feet. Aki's hot skin tastes of oily spices. His knees buckle. He sits down next to me, his feet sliding out of my grasp. His body radiates heat between us. Numa, you have always been gentle and kind, he says, his shoulders shaking. He buries his face in his hands. If only. Sun Lord, stay with us, I plead. We need you. I need you. He cries out. I kneel next to him, grieving for his suffering. After a moment, he lifts his eyes, red with pain. We look at each other, God and man, in the private world we have shared for nearly 2 decades. He is brilliant, even now, radiant with his inner light. I can't, he whispers. I lay a hand on his cheek. You are a god. He cups one hand over mine. He adds the other, clutching my fingers against his skin. Startled, I look into his eyes, and for the first time I truly comprehend Aki's sacrifice. He could go to the other sky with the rest of the gods, but he always returns. He does this for mankind, for me. I pull my hand away. Aki cries out and reaches toward me. He falls against my shoulder and presses his face there, burying his grief into my skin. I embrace him, running my hands over his back, trying to soothe the unreachable pain. I stroke his shoulder blades, his spine, his buttocks. I touch his mortal shell, his eternal life and eternal grief. He cries out sharply. The noise echoes through the chamber. His attendants rush from beyond the pillars. I cannot blame them for their conclusion. They see only us in embrace, my hand on Aki's buttocks. They tear me off him and throw me against the wall. Aki screams. The priests beat me with their fists and kick my stomach. Pain burns me like fire. Stop! Yells Aki. I command you! Let him live! Either they do not hear him, or they do not believe. My ribs crack. I struggle to crawl towards salvation. Aki! I cry out. Aki grabs the pot and lifts it above his head. He trembles. Between blows, I catch his gaze. When our eyes meet, something passes between us. I cannot touch him. He is feral. It is not right. This is not the divine I see. Aki, I cry out, save me. Mother, take you all. He throws the pot to the ground. It breaks. Shit-covered shards fly against the walls. I shriek. His attendants flock to him, but they are not fast enough. He grabs a piece and slashes his wrist. He falls to his knees as the priests rush to him. I collapse, weeping, as the god himself bleeds before me. A priest kicks my head without stopping. I black out. He does not die quickly. A lingering infection takes his body one night as most men sleep, so I overhear from the hallway outside my cell. His body returns to the Dark Mother. He had no renewal in fire. Is he sunlight now, recharging his energy before returning to this world? I don't know. Perhaps he created a body and will find it when he returns. Or perhaps he ended his promise and left humanity for the other sky to join the inattentive gods. I cannot tell if Aki's curse was effective when he invoked the Dark Mother. The chanting continues thrice daily. Peasants press against the temple walls, begging for a blessing. They call Aki's name. Perhaps the priests told them that the sun god renewed early, or that he is indisposed. Perhaps they told them nothing. If the Dark Mother takes more to her bosom than usual, no one tells me of it. It is a lonely life I lead. They let me live, perhaps because Aki ordered it at the end, although they took my unworthy hands and eyes. They keep me on the south side of the temple in a cell with a tiny crack in the wall. When I place my wrist stumps against it, I feel warm sunlight and cooler periods marking nighttime. I do not feel Aki. The sun still rises each morning. Sometimes, as I lie chained, I remember his smell. Indeed, I cannot forget. I keep the records that exist only in my mind. I write and rewrite them in my own impermanent thoughts. Even gods create things they wish to be rid of.
One 50. The last psalm in the Bible, a Harshad number, and the closest anyone has been able to work out Dunbar's number. Dunbar's number, by the way, is kind of interesting. It's defined as a theoretical cognitive limit to how many stable social relationships you can maintain with individuals. It's an interesting idea, based as much on the processing power of the neocortex as anything else, and it's not an exact number, just an approximation. But I like untidy numbers. Untidy numbers are inherently reassuring to me because if something's untidy, then it means it's just like everything else. And more importantly, it's just like me. Some of the most entertaining things in the world are untidy, from tiramisu to Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China. And if numbers are the same way, I really should be less frightened of them. Speaking of fear, of course, we've now terrified you, or worried you, or at the very least, crept up behind you and gone boogity 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 for 150 weeks. 150 weeks. That's an impressive number, however you cut it, and there are some people who deserve thanks for getting us this far. Ben Phillips, two-fisted editor extraordinaire, has steered the ship for as long as I've been with it and more. He's a very sharp, very discerning editor who, like the best of his kind, does largely invisible work. These stories are this good because Ben picks them, and he doesn't do so frivolously, and he certainly does not do so quickly. Aided by slush wranglers Ellen Allen and Sean Garrett, he picks the best stories he can find, the most varied stories he can find, and presents them to you. Some of them you'll have liked, some you won't, and some will have offended you. If the third is the case, I direct you to the paragraph-long warning at the top of the site. If Pseudopod has a mission statement, it's this. We are deadly serious about scaring you, and if that takes you to places you don't want to go, don't go to them. We'll still be here next week, and we'll be going somewhere different. Then there are the people behind the people, like Steve, who started Escapepod that started it all, and of course the phenomenal Mer, a ridiculously prolific, talented author whose work needs to be in your earphones or on your screen immediately if it isn't already. And of course Inara, a woman who could make the Muppet Show run on time, she's so good at what she does, and I'm including Gonzo, the chickens, and the cows in that. And finally Matt, who runs the awesome pod disc for us. You should check that out too, by the way. And then there's me. My job's easy. It's also a job I've always kind of wanted, because if you're the chorus, which I pretty much am, You're not on stage much, and when you are, all eyes are on you. And if anyone thinks I've ever been in any doubt of that, I invite you to go back and listen to episode 49, my first day on the job, and listen to the sounds of a very, very frightened Dell realizing he's talking to the entire internet. But here's the thing. This job is brilliant, because I get to do 3 jokes and leave the stage, introducing you to the best stories in the world. I get to show you the future being forged. I get to introduce you to authors and stories that will be with you the rest of your lives. I get to show you fear in a handful of syllables. And that is a privilege I promise I will never, ever take for granted. In Mike Carey's superb new comic series from Vertigo, The Unwritten, there's a moment where the main character casually rattles off the fictional geography of London, pointing out the Ministry of Truth from 1984 to his agent, amongst other buildings. What we're standing in here, right now, wherever you are, is a map of the future of horror. A map we all build every week, from authors to escape artist staff to you. This is what we attend to, and unlike the unfortunate hero of Vylar's story, we get thanked for making other people happy. Or being afraid to turn the light off. Either's fine. So thank you for sticking with us. If you feel like being generous, please help pay our costs by clicking on Feed the Pod at pseudopod.org, and if you can't, then all we ask is you tune in next week. The Undoing is by Sarah Totten, and comes with a warning from the author. Please don't eat whilst listening to it. We're a production of Escape Artists Incorporated, and we're released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. Our closing music is by Hopeful Machines, a side project of Ego Likeness, who you can find out more about at egolikeness.com. And we slip through the streets whilst everyone sleeps.